Thank you very much. First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me opportunity to come to Toronto and to give a talk at this conference. My talk is about certain a priori bounds for the topology of polynomials in two variables, of complex polynomials in two variables, which are used in the study of restricted version of Hilbert sixth sense problem concerning limit cycles of planar polynomial vector fields, and which generalize the following fact, which I believe to be well known. A fact concerning polynomials in one variable, complex polynomials in one variable, and which gives an a priori bound for roots and critical points of this polynomial in terms of its higher coefficient and the critical values. Namely, if we suppose that the polynomial is monic, and if we assume that zero in the source is a critical point, and the critical values, and all the critical values lie in the closed disk of radius 1, then the conclusion is that the roots and the critical points of this polynomial lie in the closed disk of radius 4. The proof of the theorem of this, it is not theorem, it is a simple statement, is an exercise using a Kirby one-quarter theorem. So what is Kirby one-quarter theorem? It says that if you have a univalent holomorphic function from unit disk to C, that is injective, which tends 0 to 0, and which has a unit derivative at 0, then the conclusion is that the image of the unit disk contains a disk of radius 1 quarter centered at 0. And the implication of the initial proposition from the Poincaré one-quarter theorem is a simple exercise, analyzing the polynomial as a ramified covering and applying the Kirby one-quarter theorem for a map in which conjugates P with the power in the neighborhood of the infinity. And our goal is to generalize this fact to the case of polynomials of two variables. By the way, I should say that I don't know any written reference to this proposition. And I would be glad if somebody could tell me if it is written somewhere. So I will consider polynomial in two variables. I write it down as a sum of its highest homogeneous part and lower terms. The highest homogeneous part will be denoted by H small, the lower terms will be denoted by H prime. And I will make the two following hypotheses. First is that the polynomial the homogeneous polynomial which gives highest homogeneous part is generic in the following sense. Its zero set is a union of complex lines passing through zero. And I will assume that all these complex lines are simply zero lines if we denote the degree by n plus 1. Then this assumption means that there are exactly n plus 1 distinct simple zero lines of the highest homogeneous part. The second assumption is that zero, as before, zero in C2 is a critical point of the polynomial. And under this assumption, under the first assumption of genericity, the level curves, the complex level curves of the polynomial P are compact Riemann surfaces. Compact Riemann surfaces in the projective plane with which are punctured in transversal intersection points with the infinity line. Therefore, near the infinity line, each individual level curve is locally a union of punctured disks. And this neighborhood depends on the choice of the level curve. And in the neighborhood of infinity, the foliation defined by the level curve of the polynomial is topologically equivalent to the one defined by the highest homogeneous part. And so the all the non-trivial topology of a level curve is concentrated in some compact domain. And our goal is to estimate the domain containing all the non-trivial topology. To be more precise, I'll choose the coordinate, orthogonal coordinate in C2 in the following way. So that the y-axis doesn't belong to the zero set of the highest homogeneous part. Under this assumption, there exists a B disk, which I denote the X, Y, X capital, Y capital, the radii of the by disk with the following property. The topology of a level curve, ST, is contained in the by disk. By definition, this means the following. The complement of the level curve to the by disk is a disjoint union of n plus one copies of punctured disk. That is, if you consider the projection of the level curve to the x-axis, then each component of the complement is one-to-one projected onto the complement of the x-axis to the horizontal section of the by disk. So this is the definition, what does it mean that topology of a level curve is contained in a by disk. And the main result provides an upper bound of the radio of the by disk containing all the non-trivial topology. And the upper bound is explicit. Explicit in terms of the value under consideration, the highest homogeneous part, and the critical values. First of all, before formulating the result precisely, I will tell some words where it was used. So there is a Hilbert 16th problem which deals with planar polynomial vector fields. Real planar polynomial vector fields and they are limit cycles. The statement of the problem is the following. Is it true that the number of limit cycles is bounded by some constant depending on the degrees of the components of the field? The problem is still is open and has a more than centennial history, and there is an excellent review of the problem with the recent state of art written down by Yuli Ilyashenko. In the Bulletin of American Mathematical Society. This Hilbert 16th problem has a restricted version. It asks the same question of the number of limit cycles, but not for all the polynomial vector fields, but only for those which are close enough to polynomial Hamiltonian vector fields. Namely, consider a Hamiltonian polynomial vector field. It defines a tangent line field, which are zero lines of some of differential of some polynomial. So take a polynomial p and consider zero lines of its differential. It defines effoliation by real curves in two plane. There could be closed curves which we call ovals, in which form then they form a continuous family of ovals, which saturate an analysis-like domain bounded by singular ovals. And now we take a polynomial one form omega take a polynomial one form omega and consider a deformation of this line field given by zero lines of the perturbed form, the perturbed differential, which is the differential plus some epsilon times omega. Some oval, some regular oval can of the non-perturbed Hamiltonian field can generate a limit cycle of the perturbed line field. But and this is and this can occur only in the case when certain Abelian integral vanishes, namely each oval is contained in some level curve, denote T, the level of the corresponding level, and an oval gives rise to a limit cycle of the perturbed field only when the integral of the form over the oval under consideration vanishes. This integral is a function of the value of the polynomial, which is called the Abelian integral associated to the perturbation. And the restricted Hilbert problem asks how many regular ovals which generate limit cycles. To give an upper bound for the number of the regular ovals of the non-perturbed Hamiltonian vector field, which generate limit cycles of the perturbed field. And this, by the previous argument, this number is bounded by the number of real zeros of the Abelian integral. And so the restricted, this restricted version of the Hilbert 16th problem is reduced to the equation to bound the number of zeros of the abelian integral, which is an analytic function of the value of the polynomial. The abelian integral admits an analytic extension up to a holomorphic function on the universal cover of C punctured at the critical values of the polynomial. And this extension can be explicitly described in the following terms. Consider a point on the real line, T0, and we take it as a marked point of the universal cover. And consider a path that moves from T0 away from the real axis to some point T. And so the real, and so when we move to the complex domain, we consider the complex level curve, which lives in C2, and which is no more real level curve, and we cannot tell anything about ovals there. On the other hand, the complex level curve ST0, which lives also in C2, has a real slice. Which is a real oval gamma T0. And one can follow the path going from T0 to T as a homotopy of the level curve ST0 to ST. And one can follow this also by homotopy of the initial oval gamma T0 in class of closed curves on the complex level surfaces. And the resulting complex oval on the complex level surface is not uniquely defined. It is uniquely defined up to homotopy once we fix our path. But and the extension of the integral to the value t is by definition the same integral, but or of the initial form, but over the extended oval, gamma t. And so this is a complex analytic function, and Ilyashenko and Yakovenko, studying zeros of abelian integrals, proposed the following an approach dealing with abstract situation when one has an analytic function on some domain. There is a compact set in this domain, and one has to bound the number of zeros of the function in the compact domain. And this and there is an a priori bound, which was obtained by Ilyashenko and Yakovenko. So the number of zeros is less than or equal to some geometric constant depending only on the domain in the compact times the quantity which I will define just now. Logarithm of some ratio m capital over m small, the m capital is the supremum of the module of the function on the unbound domain U, and m small is the maximum of the same module of the function F, but over the smaller compact K. And this estimate holds holds always in the general setting of any analytic function. And the conclusion is that it is it would be useful to bound to bound the number of zeros of analytic function. It would be useful to find an upper bound of the supremum of analytic function on some domain. Just it doesn't give directly a bound of the number of zeros, but it is something some useful. It would be some useful information. And therefore, this would be interesting to find an upper bound of the abelian integral on some domain. For example, if we assume that our form is monomial, then to obtain an upper bound of the abelian integral, one has to bound the distance of the complex cycle of integration to the zero, and the length of the cycle. If we if we manage to bound these two quantities, then we would be able to bound to provide an upper bound for the abelian integral. And I will concentrate on this quantity, on the distance of the complex oval to zero. And to obtain this quantity, it is it would be enough to find a compact set where all the non-trivial topology of the level curve be concentrated. And this motivates the main result concerning the upper bound of topology. Concerning zeros of the abelian integral, I should mention a well-known result by Varshenko and Chovansky, which Varshenko and Chovansky says tells that if there exists a constant depending on the degree of the polynomial under consideration, such that the number of zeros of an abelian integral, the number of isolated zeros, is less than this constant. So this constant, which provides an informal bound, exists, but it is not explicit. There were several attempts, several partial results providing different values of bounds of the number of zeros. But however, these bounds, which are explicit, are not uniform. This result was obtained by Dmitry Novikov, Yuli Ilyashenko, and Sergei Yakovenko. The best known explicit upper bound was obtained in our recent paper with Yuli Ilyashenko. It looks like this. The minimal, I will not formulate it because I don't have enough time, but it is this paper is available on archive. Now I'll pass to the precise statement of the result on bound of topology. So I will leave the same assumption as above. So now to formulate the main result precisely, one should normalize our polynomial in appropriate way by variable changes in the source and in the image. To do this, I will need a definition of norm of a polynomial. Definition: if Q is a homogeneous polynomial, we define its norm as a maximum value of its module on the unit sphere. Another definition: if Q is not a homogeneous polynomial, but it is a sum of homogeneous components, then we define its norm is the sum of the norms of its components. And now I'm ready to define the normalization of the polynomial and equation. So the polynomial P as above is said to be normalized. If the norm of the highest homogeneous part equals 1, and all the critical values lie in the closed disk of radius 2. Now I will define a certain quantity CC prime associated to the highest homogeneous part, which is responsible for the gap between two zero lines of the highest homogeneous part. So let us consider zero set of highest homogeneous part, which is a union of lines, and denote C1 to be n times the minimal distance, the minimal gap between two zero lines. The distance between two complex lines is taken in the Fubini study in the spherical metric of the projective line. So if these lines are equidistributed as points on the projective line, then it is natural to expect that the minimal distance behaves like square root of the numbers. Then this explains why I put here n. So I recall that n plus 1 is the degree of the polynomial. And now C prime, I define C prime to be the minimum between 1 and this value C1. It is 1 if C1 is greater than 1, otherwise it is C1. Theorem 1. Let P be a normalized polynomial. Then there are the following statements which hold true. First statement: for any complex value T, the topology of the corresponding level curve lies in first statement is the following: there exists an orthogonal coordinate system in C2 such that for any complex value T, the topology of the level curve corresponding to T lies in the B-disk, in a B-disk, the XY, via X and Y, the radius of B-disk, admit an upper bound. They are less than or equal to some constant R0, depending on C prime and N, times the following. Times the maximal value between 1 and module T over 5 power 1 over N plus 1. And the value for R0 is explicitly written. So R0 equals to C prime power minus 14 N cubed times N power 65 N cubed. And so this value exposes to infinity when a pair of level of zero lines of the highest homogeneous part collide. So this bound doesn't pretend to be sort of uniform. Now the second statement. So the continuation of the theorem. The second statement provides the upper bound for the norm of the lower terms. So if a polynomial is normalized and we know just nothing a priori about the lower terms, but we know that the highest homogeneous part has unit norm, but and the critical values are in two disks. And of course, we assume that zero is a critical point of the polynomial. We assume this from the beginning. And then this implies that the lower term, the norm of the lower terms, is less than or equal than C prime power minus 13 N power 4 times N power 64 times N power 4. So the formulation of the theorem is finished, and this is one of the main results. Now I have some time to tell something about the proof, how the theorem is proved. So we have the classical theory of analytic function in one variable, and especially if the theory of univalent function is well developed, they provide a priori bound for functions in one variable. But here we have a function in two variables, and here we have to prove some a priori bounds. To do this, I'll use the projection of the level curve to the x-axis. And I prove an a priori bound for the configuration of the critical values of the projection. And so this is essentially an analysis of functions of one variable, which are root functions of the polynomial. But what is the rest? The rest are purely topological arguments. So there are a combination of two kind of arguments. The argument of function in one variable plus topological arguments dealing with evanishing cycles. And this topology on evanishing cycles and the Carl-Lipschitz theorem. First of all, I will reformulate the theorem. I will reformulate the theorem applying rescaling. There are two possible cases. The first case is easy when the polynomial P is just a homogeneous polynomial. Then all the non-trivial topology of a level curve is concentrated at zero because level curves are union of lines. If the lower terms are rather small, that is, have norm less than or equal to one, then there are simply a priori estimates about the topology. It's very straightforward. And the case B, which is the principal case, when the norm of the lower terms is greater than one. This is the principal case of interest. And in this case, we will rescale our polynomial as follows. We consider polynomial P tilde on a new variable X tilde and Y tilde, which is obtained from P by variable change. Preserving the highest homogeneous part, just linear variable change, preserving highest homogeneous part, and making zero critical point being sent to zero critical value. Yes, here is the variable change, and we do it in such a way that the norm, so we can write down the new polynomial as highest homogeneous part, which is the same, plus lower term, which will be denoted by h prime tilde. We do our rescaling in such a way that the norm of the lower term became equal to one, and by definition, the norm of the highest homogeneous part is the same. And recall that zero is a critical point. And now the corresponding critical value is zero. And now we reformulate our main result as the following theorem. Let a polynomial P tilde be arbitrary polynomial satisfying this assumption, the new assumptions, and we recall that the polynomial, the homogeneous polynomial H is generic, and then the following conclusion holds. There exists a critical value of the polynomial P tilde that does not lie in a disk with a radius written explicitly. So there is some explicit value delta depending on sigma prime or on C prime and N, such that there is at least one critical value that doesn't lies on the distance delta from zero. And by a simply rescaling argument, this would imply the first theorem. So now I will concentrate in the in remaining minutes on the on a sketch of proof of the second theorem. I can write, of course, this value can be written explicitly, but I wouldn't like to write it down now. So to sketch the proof, I'll recall the definition of ancient cycles. They are cycles in the first homology group of a level curve with integer coefficients. So, what is local vanishing cycle? If you take a critical point of a polynomial, near the critical point, the corresponding critical level curve is a transversal has transversal intersection with two branches. And neighbor level curves intersected with the same disk centered at the critical point are locally cylinders. With the meridian tending to the critical point. The meridian of the cylinders in the neighbor curve tend are contracting to the critical point. This meridian represents homology classes in the level curves, which are called local vanishing cycles. Local vanishing cycles and what is a global vanishing cycle? If you fix the base point to zero, and a path to a critical value, say zero, then we can extend the local vanishing cycle gamma t to some oval, to some complex oval on the complex level curve S to zero. And this represents what we call global vanishing cycle. And consider all the possible paths from T0 to all the possible paths in C with punctured critical values, except for the end, which go from T0 to the critical value 0. Then the theorem due to Picard and Lefschetz implies that if we take all the all the vanishing cycle corresponding to all the paths, and we take union of all the collection of all the vanishing cycles corresponding to all the paths, then they generate the whole homology integer homology group. And this is the case statement used in the topological argument. And so the reasoning will be the following. Suppose the polynomial P tilde is in the second theorem, and all the critical values have modulo less than delta, some delta explicitly written. Then the vanishing cycles corresponding to all the paths cannot generate the homology group they generate a smaller subspace. And this will bring us with a contradiction to Picard-Lepschitz. So, if we assume that all the critical values are small, we show that the vanishing cycles, the cycles vanishing to zero along all the paths, cannot generate the whole homology group. And to arrive to this, I will need a main technical statement. There exists an R, a positive R, depending on the polynomial, doesn't matter. It's just existence. Such that for any value t which is less than c than delta, the previous delta, the following statement holds. If we take the circle t equals r in the x-axis, then there is no critical value projection of the level curve which lie on the circle. More precisely, no critical value xt of projection of the level curve to the x-axis lies on the circle, on the fixed circle. A first statement, the second statement says that at least one xy lies outside the corresponding disk. One of them, which is zero, lies definitely inside, and there is at least one which lies outside. Using this fact, I'll show that all the vanishing cycles to zero along paths in the disk of radius delta admit a representative projected to the x-axis inside the disk of radius r. And this is a topological argument which I skip, and the other, another topological argument shows that since we have at least one critical value of projection outside, there should be at least one element of the homology group whose projection to the x-axis should intersect some ray going from xj to infinity. And so if all the critical values be contained in this disk by delta, then all the vanishing cycles would be projected inside dr and cannot generate the whole homology group. So now I have to stop. Thank you very much.
The result will give you the estimate on the one form x to the n to the dy?
Yes, but if we study zeros of abelian integral, we can just multiply our perturbing form omega by constant in order to make all the coefficients to be units, and then if you know to deal with monomials, then we know to deal with just arbitrary polynomial forms.
Thank you.